Rambler Sparkling Water was founded in Austin, Texas, and comes in five delicious flavors. Original, with no additional flavoring, lemon lime, grapefruit, blackberry, and satsuma, a type of mandarin orange. And when served ice cold, there's just no better tasting sparkling water out there. I have tried all the Rambler flavors. My personal favorite is grapefruit. It is just a very light taste of grapefruit, and you can just drink one after another. It is like a session beer, but, you know, for sparkling water. Anyway, you can follow Rambler on Instagram at Rambler Austin and visit RamblerSparklingWater.com to find out where to buy and learn more about their conservation partnerships with American Rivers and Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. Go to RamblerSparklingWater.com. And by the way, Rambler's newest flavor is coming out. It's going to be Wild Cherry, coming out in January. You heard it here first. Go get some Rambler. Are you holding back on some travel plans for this holiday break because you are afraid you can't speak the language? Is the language gap holding you back? Well, that is no problem if you have Babbel. Speak like a whole new you with Babbel, which is a language learning app that gets you talking. It's got 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts, and they can get you speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. With advanced speech recognition by Babbel, it's a lot like having a personal language tutor in your phone helping you pronounce anything you need to whenever you open your mouth. So I have been using Babbel to brush up on some Spanish for a trip that we're thinking about taking in the winter to Mexico. And I'm pretty excited to get down there and then bust out some Spanish. And my kids, I think, will be absolutely shocked because I'm pretty sure they don't think I can speak English or most any language. Anyway, here is a special holiday deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for the Atlas Obscura podcast listeners at babbel.com/atlas. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/atlas, spelled BABBEL.com/atlas. Rules and restrictions may apply. Have you ever worn a pointy hat?
Not as often as one might think. You know, I definitely have some cool hats. Yeah. The point is a little too on the nose or on the point for me. And to be honest, you know, the pointy hat tends to be much more of a costume. It tends to be more of an image of like a fictional witch. And it's a really interesting history because it's very hard to pin down where the pointy hat originates. But no, that is not something that I wear in my day-to-day.
Well, you have it right here. If you're looking for a witch, you're probably not wearing a pointy hat. But that is the question of the hour, which is, where did all this come from? Why the pointy hat? Why the cauldron? Why the broom? Why, for God's sake, are witches riding a broom? You just take it for granted. But like, stop, ask yourself, why? I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, I'm talking to Pam Grossman. She is an old friend. She is a delightful witch, which is just always a fun thing to say. And she's also a writer, a curator, and host of the podcast, The Witch Wave. As the winter solstice and Yule are upon us, we thought we would honor this moment, this pagan holiday, by talking about where the image of the witch actually comes from. You know the one, the broomstick, the pointy hat, the whole nine yards. And just a heads up, as we answer these questions, some of them get a little not safe for work, only mildly, very slightly. Anyway, just a warning, but it is a very fun conversation. Maybe the easiest to trace back to its roots part of witch gear, which is the cauldron. I mean, basically like a cooking pot. I know that we have like a famous one in the Atlas called the Frensham Cauldron in England. Mm-hmm. Do you know that story at all?
I know a little bit of it. I think there are several versions. The version that I know is that there was an alleged witch. Her name was Mother Ludlam, and she was a benevolent witch, or at least most people thought so. She also was kind of a lender. She could source objects for people.
Yeah.
And they would kind of strike a bargain with her, and they would ask for an object that they wanted somehow conjured, whether through magic or mundane means, I'm not sure. And then she would leave this object for them in a cave that came to be called Mother Ludlam's Cave.
Okay.
And so at some point, a visitor asks for a cauldron. So she conjures the cauldron for this visitor. They take it out of the cave. They use it for whatever means, nefarious or otherwise, they wanted to. It was time for them to give the cauldron back, and they just didn't. They kept the cauldron.
Classic neighbor story. You're like, yeah, you can borrow the drill. Like, no problem. Like, I will need it back. And your neighbor's like, oh, no problem. You never get it back. Never comes
back. Of course. Yeah. Of course. All been there. And so Mother Ludlam gets pissed.
Yeah.
And she, you know, her reputation precedes her. And this person realizes that he has incurred the wrath of a witch, who, again, I think usually was supposed to be rather lovely. But they hide this cauldron in a church because there's a belief that witches cannot tread on hallowed ground. And so the cauldron is now hanging in this church, protected from the witch forever.
Can witches tread on hallowed ground?
I mean, I do it all the time. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay, so the cauldron kind of makes sense. What about, I mean, much weirder to me is the broomstick, because I understand that it too is part of like a domestic tool set, right? So there is this sense in which it's connected with womanhood or like the duties of womanhood in the past, this idea of kind of like keeping the house. But like, why did it become so associated with witchery, this kind of flying broom? It's not just any broomstick. Like, it's a flying broomstick. It's got like, where does that start to come into the story?
Yeah, well, first we have to talk about the witch's Sabbath, which is this idea that, you know, during every full moon, witches would gather together and they would party and they would do the devil's bidding. And how you get to the Sabbat is you fly there. And witches usually are shown flying on brooms. And the idea is that in order to make this domestic implement airborne, you would have to rub it with some kind of flying ointment. Now, this flying ointment was an unguent that was said to have been made from, wait for it, babies. And so there's all kinds of beliefs that, you know, witches are not just homicidal creatures, that sometimes they're cannibalistic creatures, or that they commit infanticide because babies were the prime ingredient for this flying ointment.
Yeah.
So that's where some of these more horrific tropes start to crop up. Anyhow, so you make this flying ointment, again, with some baby juice and some other herbs, and then you rub it on this, you know, broomstick or other kind of pole, and then you could ride it to the witch's Sabbath, or you could get up to all kinds of other nefarious doings, right? Now, interestingly, we have a lot of literature and a lot of research that goes back hundreds of years that says, okay, wait a second, this whole babies thing sounds a little suspect. Perhaps what these alleged witches were doing was making a hallucinogenic ointment, that it wasn't actually baby parts, but it was herbs that we know to be psychotropic, such as belladonna and henbane and mandrake and all these other, you know, witchy botanicals. And that perhaps these women weren't actually flying to a Sabbath, but they were hallucinating and, you know, feeling like they were having this phantasmagorical experience with demons and, yeah. and all kinds of lunar flights of fancy. And some of these scholars who put forth this theory say, well, what is a good way for you to get psychotropic drugs into your bloodstream? And the answer is through mucous membranes, that if you were to ingest it directly, these are poisonous substances yeah. And you could kill yourself. But if you rub it on your armpits or maybe some of your nether regional parts, that you would get a nice hit of the of these drugs and have a really nice high.
Yeah.
And so then we get all of this kind of theorizing that one of the best ways to deliver these psychotropic drugs through your mucous membranes, if you were a woman, is through a dildo of some sort. I did not yeah. make this up, yep. Dylan.
No, I know. This is not, this is my favorite theory of the witch's broomstick. There's a quote from 1324. It's an investigation into a suspected witch named Lady Alice Kittler. Mm-hmm. And it says, in rifling the closet of the lady, they found a pipe of ointment wherewith she greased a staff upon which she ambled and galloped through thick and thin. And you're like, all right, like, I just, you know, so much of everything we think about witches has to do with both domesticity and the like, and then the breaking of that, of the sort of like that domesticity, you know, like, oh, drugs,
being
direct
sexuality.
Yes, direct sexuality. Yes. Like, oh my God, this is so the idea that the broomstick is not just, it's both sex and drugs in like one convenient package. Like, wow, powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to your point, Dylan, we see this time and time again, which is these allegedly safe feminine spaces being filled with these objects that at first glance might seem safe or mundane, but in the wrong hands, right. or perhaps the right hands, yeah. are re-signified and are used as tools of like disobedience and self-pleasure and liberation and transgression.
We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Pam and I are going to predict what the witch of the future will be like. That's after this. Autograph Collection Hotels offers over 300 independent hotels around the world, each exactly like nothing else. Hand-selected for their inherent craft, each hotel tells its own unique story through distinctive design and immersive experiences, from medieval falconry to volcanic wine tasting. Autograph Collection is part of the Marriott Bonvoy portfolio of over 30 hotel brands around the world. Find the unforgettable at autographcollection.com.
Who likes skipping breakfast? I know I don't, but I like to keep money in my pocket. Thanks to McDonald's, breakfast on a budget has never hit this good. I can grab two McD faves, like a sausage McGriddles, sausage burrito, hash browns, or the savory sausage McMuffin. I can even add a premium roast coffee for $1.69, any size, any time of day, and order ahead in the app so it's ready when I get there. Bite into breakfast without breaking your bank at Mickey D's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Hi, it's Dylan here. If you have ever learned something surprising or been delighted by this podcast, I have a very quick request. Whatever platform you are listening on, just take a few seconds and rate and review the show. It makes a big difference both to the team creating the show and it sends a signal to the platforms that people like this. So just take a moment, rate and review the show. Thanks. And we are back with our all-time favorite witch, Pam Grossman. I didn't realize this, but in almost every depiction of the witch until like the 1800s or even later, like they're all naked. They're just always being depicted as naked ladies. And I like some of this just always feels like it's just some dude's imagination, like really running away with them. It's like, whoa, oh, but, what are these ladies
absolutely,
doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's so interesting because I forget who said it recently, but it was something to the effect of like, with every new technology comes a new version of porn.
Yes.
And, you know, with like when the internet showed up, suddenly we had a proliferation of porn online.
Yeah.
When the printing press was first invented, it printed the Bible. And it printed witch hunting manuals. And these witch hunting manuals were super titillating. And they painted all kinds of pictures of, again, mostly women who would get together. They would get naked. They would hang out with demons. They would kill. I mean, it's very salacious stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, to that end, a lot of the artwork that was being created at the time by, you know, I'm just thinking of some of the German artists who are most famous for creating images of witches like Albrecht Dürer,
yeah.
They were kind of creating porn. I mean, yeah. It was high-end, classy, expensive porn, yeah. But they were creating like these images of fantasy that collectors would keep in their cabinets of curiosity and their private back rooms,
yeah.
And show to their friends.
Yeah.
And those images were often of naked ladies hanging out, you know, doing magic. Hanging out with demons
under the cover of a like, this is how you avoid witches. Take this manual home and read it carefully because there's a lot of important information in there. Yeah, I bet.
Totally. That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's interesting because, yes, the witches were almost always naked. Sometimes they were really old.
Yes.
They were crones. Sometimes they were super hot young ladies.
Yes.
So it was just about these hyper sexualized women doing things that the public purported to be sinful.
Pam, women are scary when they're attractive because they have power over you, and they're also scary when they're old because they're not attractive anymore, and that's scary. It's like
right.
Women the are scary at all time... stages of life, except for
yeah. Right. Right, except when we are like pregnant, I guess.
Yeah,
or
maybe.
when we have a newborn,
yeah.
I guess. But yeah. Like, don't breastfeed that newborn in front of anybody because that's scary.
We're
scary, Dylan.
Yeah,
we're real scary.
We've been trying to tell you for 3,000 years, Pam. I just went.
Guilty as charged.
All right. So we've got the cauldron. Got the broomstick. These are genuinely practical items. And, you know, I hope that this theory is correct because these are witches having some fun. And let's talk about the pointy hat. Where the hell's the pointy hat? Do we have any idea? When does this start showing up? Do we have any sense of like when the hat gets involved?
Yes. So what we do know is that wearing a pointy black hat was just something like rich ladies did if mm-hmm. they could afford it. There's a very famous painting by John Michael Wright called Portrait of Mrs. Salisbury with her grandchildren. This was painted in around 1675. It's a fabulous painting. She looks like a witch, but she's just a rich lady wearing a pointy black hat. That was the fashion. And as happens with trends, things then fall out of fashion. And what the rich ladies were wearing one year, several years later, poor people start to wear, or weird, you know, crones, or people who, you know, don't have me.
Down the like economic, you know, it's like, right, suddenly it's like Britney was a rich girl's name, and now it's for those, you know, those people, you know?
That's like, exactly right. That's yeah. exactly right. And so then in, you know, the 18th century, we start to see this pointy hat be associated with like foolish old ladies, with poor people, with people who would just wear these hats to travel. Like it just became a little bit like the hat of the commoner. It wasn't very stylish after a while. And then what happens is we have a few pieces of, I would call it pop culture at the time, which kind of like solidifies this image. And one of the most famous examples is by a political satirical cartoonist you might have heard of, William Hogarth. Uh-huh. He creates a very famous, very funny drawing called Credulity, Superstition, and Fanaticism. This is in 1762. There's a lot to this image, but for our purposes, we want to focus on there's like a judge and he's holding in his hands a tiny little lady on a broomstick with a pointy hat.
Uh-huh.
And he's holding this up to make fun of the witch craze, to make fun of fanaticism. But as you know, we can call it an early meme. As these memes go, you know, they get replicated and circulated and they become a sort of congealed image or a crystallized image of a witch. And then, you know, cut to 1939, the MGM movie, Wizard of Oz,
right.
The Wicked Witch of the West. She is modeled after, you know, several of these images in fine art, but certainly William Hogarth's image is one of the inspirations for costume designer Adrian for his version of the Wicked Witch of the West. Because she doesn't look like that at all in the original illustrations for the L. Frank Baum books. Huh. So, you know, the image of the witch is very fluid. It's constantly changing, constantly morphing. She is a shapeshifter after all.
Yeah.
But the pointy hat definitely has been associated with her ever since the Wizard of Oz movie.
Yeah, I love this idea that it just like, it falls out of fashion and the people who are still wearing it are kind of seen as like old fashioned or foolish or
yes.
broke, or like they're trying to aspire to be higher class. So they're trying to do this thing, but the higher class has moved on. And like, that's super interesting. The thing that you do see in these old images, well, they're naked, but they do have cauldrons. Like there's images mm-hmm. from the early 1500s and 1600s, yep. and they've got cauldrons. They're making stuff. The yep. broom is maybe there. There may be some Sometimes. Flying. There might be some flying, but it's not quite. It usually looks a little different. Like, and there's no hats. And again, nude. By the time you get to the 1800s, the witches are like young and buxom. I wonder, what is the witch of the future, Pam? What will become part of the witch's tool set in the technological future? I don't know. I like thinking about techno witches.
I mean, it's probably Bjork, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, for me, what's so interesting, getting back to our earlier point about technology, is like, whatever technology we have to hand becomes adapted and used by witches.
Yeah.
So, like, there is this whole younger generation of people who are on what they call witch talk.
Yeah.
And witch talk, you know, it has like something like a billion views. Like it's like really, really popular, really, really crazy corner of TikTok. And a lot of people on witch talk, they talk about emoji spells, you know, like, and this is happening now where they will, you know, use the language of emoji to try to like manifest something.
Mm.
And so I think whatever the technology is in the future, there's going to be porn from it and there's going to be witchcraft from it. So, you know, not to plug my own work too much, but one of the lines from my book, Waking the Witch, that people quote a lot is, show me your witches and I'll show you your feelings about women. And it's because the witch is this perfect container that people brew, if you will, their fantasies and their fears about feminine power. And so, yeah, if you think women are scary, if you think they're too powerful, if you think they're ugly, if you think that they're too sexy, if you think that when they age, they should just disappear, and so you want to paint them as something monstrous, like all of it goes into the brew that is witch. But it's also really exciting that since the rise of the feminist movement, we have seen much more positive depictions of witches in pop culture, in fine art, and in real life as well. So the fact that the witch is on the rise and that there are so many people who identify as witches in a positive, empowering sense, I think speaks really highly of, you know, the aspirations we have for the rise of women and feminine people to hopefully become more equal to everybody else in this world. Let's hope so, Dylan. Let's manifest it.
Totally. Well, Pam, like, it's always a joy to talk to you. It's so fun.
Oh my gosh, I could do this all day.
I know. Same. Yeah. All right. Well, more witch talk to come. Thanks for coming in and helping us understand why the iconic witch looks the way she does.
Thank you, Dylan.
That was Pam Grossman, writer, curator, host of The Witch Wave, and author of the book Waking the Witch, and a forthcoming book called Magic Maker, which will be out October of next year. Go listen to her podcast, buy her book. She is just an absolute delight. This episode was produced by Manolo Morales. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The people who make our show include Doug Baldinger, Chris Naka, Camille Stanley, Johanna Mayer, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire, Gabby Gladney, Amanda McGowan, Alexa Lim, Casey Holford, and Luce Fleming. Our theme music is by Sam Tyndall. And if you like the show, please, please give us a review and rating wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, you know, like, subscribe, follow. Never miss an episode. You know the drill. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I'll see you next time.
Skipping breakfast. I know I don't, but I like to keep money in my pocket. Thanks to McDonald's, breakfast on a budget has never hit this good. I can grab two McD faves, like a sausage McGriddles, sausage burrito, hash browns, or the savory sausage McMuffin. I can even add a premium roast coffee for $1.69. Any size, any time of day. And order ahead in the app so it's ready when I get there. Bite into breakfast without breaking the bank at Mickey D's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Kevin, more boxes? You said you finished gift shopping weeks ago.
I did, so I got myself some gifts as a reward.
That's a lot of gifts.
Plus, with Chase Freedom Unlimited, I cash back 1.5% on every purchase. So it's like a little gift on top of the gifts.
Oh, I get it.
It's just like that saying. It's the gift that keeps on giving gifts for the gifts you give for giving gifts.
And now you lost me.
Chase Freedom Unlimited. How do you cash back?
Restrictions and limitations apply. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC.